The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. This last week, we've been seeing exactly the results of irresponsible fiscal and irresponsible monetary policy. I'm talking about what's going on in Greece right now, where people are seeing what the results of socialism and controlled currencies exactly are. With me right now is Jason Weinman. He is the outreach director for the Libertarian Party of Nevada. He is also Hey, how's it going, Jason? You're also the secretary for the Libertarian State Leadership Alliance, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so let's see if we can wrap our brains around this situation. You know, what are some of the things, what are the lessons that America should be learning right now from the catastrophe going on in Greece?
Well, I think the most important lesson would be fiscal responsibility. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, this is a sovereign debt crisis. It's a monetary crisis, but it's caused by irresponsible fiscal policy. Okay. And in Greece right now, it's gotten to the point where they're seeing, you know, bank runs and actual shortages because shortages in material terms because of fiscal irresponsibility. And the monetary trouble basically is a response to irresponsible fiscal spending. So Greece has a largely socialist economy. It's currently run by a coalition that translates to the Radical Left Coalition. Mm-hmm. And basically, the people of Greece rely on 30% of their economy relies on basically government pensions and government payments. And 80% of their economy is subsidized or otherwise orchestrated by the government.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's take a look at America. Let's take a look at the parallels that we're seeing right over here. Right now, what would you say are some of the areas in which we should be reexamining our own fiscal policy? Where should we be changing? Where should we be cutting back in terms of the way that we're spending money?
Well, right now the U.S. is moving in the direction of running in the way. Mm-hmm. So one advantage we have is that we're 50 states and not just one country. Mm-hmm. So here in Nevada, we have obviously different amounts of government spending than they would have in New York or California. Mm-hmm. But increasingly, the federal government is spending more and more money and is responsible for larger and larger sectors of our economy. And the role of monetary policy, especially as it's coming into play here in the United States, is that the government has less and less control over what they spend because they can spend more on debt. Mm-hmm. So instead of having to pay for fiscal spending through taxes and even inflation, they're paying for spending through Federal Reserve debt. Mm-hmm. Here in the United States, you might say that we have the advantage, unlike Greece does, of having our own central bank, the Federal Reserve, which can ultimately pay itself back with new money as long as they want to. But in practice, all of the ill effects happen regardless. Right. So in the long term, it may be an advantage for Greece that they don't have their own independent central bank and that they have to make fiscal reforms, which are going to boost productivity and growth and the things that people want and need in order to deal with this crisis. On the other hand, Greece can obviously pull out of the Eurozone and inflate their own currency, which is more along the lines of what could happen in the United States if we don't adopt some kind of policy of fiscal restraint.
And fiscal restraint really has many different angles to it. I mean, on one side, we have people who are just the recipients of what we call entitlements. But we also have a huge amount of government make work. I mean, we have a huge amount of jobs that are not being provided by the private sector because the private sector would never have that level of insanity. No private business would ever pay for any of the insane things that the government's paying for. Do you think that there's some big, large cuts that we could be doing right now? And if so, where would you say they are?
Well, absolutely. I think in the first place, I've seen some estimates on strictly corporate welfare, and you can count all kinds of different government spending as corporate welfare, because mm-hmm. in fact, most government spending goes to established, entrenched either corporate interests or public interests that are you know, equally poorly run. So mm-hmm. I would start with things like the Farm Bill. I would start with if I could only go back in time a couple of years, I would prevent. Or I guess going forward, I would prevent future bailouts of banks and failed companies like General Motors, mm-hmm. which obviously kind of cement the kinds of bad business practices that you're talking about.
Exactly. So I mean, it just allows them to do those. Go ahead.
Sorry?
I was going to say it just allows them to engage in bad business practices, not just with impunity, but actually they're getting rewarded for it. It encourages it. But go ahead, you were saying?
Right. So that's exactly right. And if you take the example of Detroit, you have a city where they pretty much followed the Greek economic model, where the government was going to spend money on make work jobs to provide employment for people. And it's all very well intentioned. It's not, at least by many of the people who support it, it's not just a hustle. The belief is that, you know, this extra spending and all of these newly employed people are going to be able to raise their standards of living with all of the money that the city's throwing around, or the country in the case of Greece. And what actually happens is you have all of this money and all of these, you know, so-called employed people who are not doing productive things. And mm-hmm. as a result, you don't have productive things to spend that money on. Right.
Exactly.
So it can either result in broad inflation or hyperinflation like we saw in the Weimar Republic in Germany, and like we likely will see in Greece if they exit the euro, or it could result in what we saw in Detroit, which is just a general decline in standards of living and people moving to go somewhere else where they don't have these problems.
Now, there is, at least from America's perspective, there is an opportunity for us, you know, I think, to really learn from some of these just ridiculous mistakes that Greece has made. And to me, a big part of that is being really judicious on where we do spend money and where we don't spend money. You know, a lot of the areas where I see some of the overspending are these huge federal level departments, whether we're talking about things like, you know, the FDA, which is redundant to private organizations, or the DEA, which is doing stuff that no one wants in the first place, or the NSA, which is spending all this money. I mean, what's happening in Nevada right now? I mean, is there a sentiment among candidates, among libertarians, that that it's time to start to dismantle or downsize some of these federal level departments?
Well, candidates who run for state office like to talk about federal fiscal restraint. Candidates who run for federal office like to talk about state fiscal restraint. And mm-hmm. even insofar as they talk about being fiscally responsible when they run, they end up winning. Just like here in Nevada, we had Republicans, many of whom, including Governor Sandoval, campaign on smaller taxes, less government. You know, those kinds of campaign promises, and when they won, and for the first time in 80 years here in Nevada, we've had a Republican majority in our lower and upper state legislative houses, and obviously Governor Sandoval is a Republican who campaigned on lower taxes and less government spending, and they passed the largest tax hike in Nevada history just about a month ago, and the truth is, you know, I don't think that these are all bad people. I've got some doubts about Sandoval, but by and large, they're well-intentioned. They wanted to raise spending on education because they thought that would benefit kids in Nevada, where we don't have very good schools. But the truth is, and this applies just as much on the federal level, the Federal Department of Education was founded in the early 70s, signed into law by Richard Nixon, and since then, education results haven't improved, right? So we're spending more and more money, but we're not getting better results for it. So I would say that it's very obvious that you can get rid of the Department of Education, save all this money, get rid of lots of risks for the kinds of problems we're seeing in Greece, boost standards of living in the United States, and also, you know, without harming education at all, or in many cases, probably making it better.
Exactly.
But that's not an intuitive belief. For whatever reason, the Department of Education is a very, very popular program. So we need more outreach and education so that people understand that more money isn't the answer.
And that certainly, you know, makes a lot of sense. Let me ask, you know, but, you know, before we run out of time, if somebody wants to get involved in Nevada, if somebody wants to get involved in Nevada and, you know, do the work now so that we're not suffering like Greece tomorrow, where should they go? What's a good website for them?
I would direct you to www.lpnevada.org. It was rated the best political website in the state of Nevada by the Review Journal. And you can click on our volunteer tab and sign up to volunteer. We've got a number of candidates coming up for the 2016 elections, and between now and then we've got plenty of initiatives that we're working on. We're just starting up our caucuses. You know, there's no limit to the amount of work to do. And this week from I would say today until I think it's Saturday, or is it Sunday, we've got Freedom Fest here in Las Vegas. So we'll be there if you have the chance to come on down to Planet Hollywood and check us out. And otherwise, we've got monthly events, several actually, starting on the first Tuesday of August. And for more information, you can sign up for our newsletter, also at www.lpnevada.org/newsletter.
Awesome. Well, Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Absolutely. Glad I could call in.
All right, guys, you've just been talking with Jason Weinman, Outreach Director for the Libertarian Party of Nevada. And if you're in Nevada, get to lpnevada.org right now, because, you know, I'm looking at the site right now. There is so much good information there, and there's so many ways that you can use that time that you have, the money that you have, to make America better, to make Nevada better. And if you don't live in Nevada and you still want to get involved, you can go to lp.org/states to see how to get involved in a libertarian party in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety. Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show,
please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Now, fiscal spending, fiscal policy is not just something that happens at the federal level. It happens at the state level. And irresponsible spending at the state level hurts us just as badly as irresponsible spending at the federal level does. With me right now is Damian Kayo. He is running for the State Assembly 27th District in New Jersey. Damian, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now let's talk about ways in which states can learn lessons from what's happening in Greece right now. What lessons should states be taking away from the disaster we're seeing in Greece?
Well, the lesson is simply that when we can't afford something, you have to fix it, and you have to fix it before the last bill comes due and you can't pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially that simple. You know, at the beginning, the reason why public sectors ended up with great benefits was to make up for a slightly less favorable level of income compared to the private sector. Now, when you look roughly what public sector make in terms of income and compare that to the benefit they get in terms of retirement and healthcare benefit, and you try to put a number on that and you compare it to the private sector, it doesn't seem fair to me anymore. Well, somebody has to pay for that, and we can't.
Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is exactly this lesson that I think is so important, that all of these public sector jobs that, you know, accomplish nothing at a very high cost, and all of these sort of pseudo-public sector jobs that are so inflated in their prices, that money comes from somewhere. It comes from someone. And if you're not getting that money, if that money's not going to you, if you are not a government contractor making millions of dollars, then that money is coming from you. And you're paying for somebody else's largesse. So let's look at New Jersey as a kind of example. What are some areas where you would say New Jersey should be downsizing its spending?
Well, our schools are costing us a fortune, clearly. Mm-hmm. And, you never want to be the one saying, well, let's give less money to our kids. Obviously, mm-hmm. that's not very popular. But what I see is that New Jersey is a very highly densely populated state, and we have a lot of cities, a lot of school districts, a lot of counties.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could unify a few things. Teachers are not making, they're not making a stealing. They're not making a lot of money. They're doing okay, and they have great benefits. So maybe we can try to at least give them the option to pay for it, and maybe this will help them realize that they have something that a lot of people in this state wish they could have. But the real issue is what I find very shocking is somewhere in the management line. Mm-hmm. There's some people, some managers of that district that make six figures return, which is nice to have. It's not that it's unacceptable. Somebody highly qualified after 30 years career is perfectly entitled to making that. But they make that with the right of retire with a big chunk of that money every year at a very young age, which clearly is not possible to do in the private sector, and then be appointed for another very good job, also paid by taxpayers' money, and get another 50, 60, 70 grand a year for that. That sounds to me like there's some money that's being wasted and some people that are taking advantage of that. And behind that, you have unions trying to protect some friends. Mm-hmm. And they say it's in the name of trying to, you know, solidarity, people getting together to try to protect all of them. It's not true. They work for very few, very small minority.
Mm-hmm. And you know, people are seeing that. I mean, more and more people in education are starting to realize that while the teachers' unions claim to be protecting teachers, they're just really protecting just a few of the teachers, a lot of the administrators. I mean, if you're a young teacher, you know, young and passionate, you're making less than somebody who just either has stopped caring or never cared in the first place. And I mean,
absolutely.
Unions exist not to protect the best teachers, because, you know, private sector is all about the best teachers. The private sector is going to like recruit those teachers, if not for a school, if for a private tutoring thing, if not for a tutoring thing, you know, a company will. Good teachers are always in demand. You don't need a union for that. But bad teachers are never in demand. And obviously, those are the real clients of the teachers' unions, and those are the people that benefit from all the political shenanigans that the teachers' unions are doing. So when you say, absolutely, you know, education is an area where we need to cut back, I completely agree. We need to cut public education spending, either by changing the management or by finding ways to get people out of a broken system and onto something else. Now, what are there other areas in New Jersey or that you see around the country where you're just like, yeah, that's an area where we need to cut spending today?
Well, on education, not only we have to cut spending, we have to let schools compete. There are school districts that are failing and they're money pits for the state, for the county. So let them compete. Let charter school comes. Let's do the opposite of what Mayor de Blasio in New York is trying to do, because he's just clearly he's the representative of the unions and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Let have school compete, and that will resolve a lot of problems there. Then pass that to the sectors. New Jersey, unfortunately, is still a fairly corrupt state. That's very sad to say. I'm very proud of my state, but some things are just dead wrong. Some things on that side of the Hudson River cost twice as much money to make as in New York. How can that be? We're not more expensive than New York. We shouldn't be. So how it is? Well, it's because when you get a job in most places in New Jersey, you don't get to decide how much you pay your employees. You know, the idea of the way an economy works, the way America works, you try to find a good compromise of how much you can pay for your labor, for your equipment, and try to pay them, well, try to not spend too much money because you want to be competitive and win the bid. On the other hand, you want to make sure that you get people that are at least qualified enough to get the job done. That's the way it works, right? Not the way it works in New Jersey. You are told how much you need to pay your employees. And they get paid ridiculous amount of money that I hope that one day in my career in finance I'll be able to make that much an hour. That's ridiculous. And it sounds great. You think, well, you know, these people are construction workers. They work hard. They're going to have their back broken by the time they're 55. It's true. I get it. But who does that really, how does that really help? These people also live in New Jersey. Then they go home and they pay property tax. And that property tax is then being used to pay the next construction guy way too much. Mm-hmm. All you do is create inflation. All you do is making it very expensive to live here. But they don't really make more money. They don't get any more potential to buy anything new. So that's not working. So that's what we call prevailing wages. That needs to be abolished. Or at least let voters in every town have the right to decide whether public jobs, public constructions should be on prevailing wages or not. And that will apply also to building a new school, building a new road. I mean, the amount of money we spend on building a mile of road is just ridiculous. So, and there's a lot of other areas of corruption where you see, you know, they put it in the ballot that you have to pay to get, because they say they want to redo something, you know, for the environment. And when you dig a little bit, you find out it's about a small park. And it's not really about the park. It's just about building a fence for the dogs. That's what it is. And somehow you end up having a $100,000 fence. I'm thinking, wait, you know what? I'll tell you something. Give me 50 grand, half of the price, and I'll build a fence myself. But you need control. You need transparency. And I'm afraid we don't have that.
I mean, that's just so accurate. I mean, the more that people are seeing this, you know, I hear this from people all over the country, and they're just saying, listen, they're saying, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I also wanted the government to try to fix everything. But now I've seen what they do, and please just make them just stop. And the Libertarian Party as a whole is seeing that.
It's not even libertarian. That's just common sense.
Yeah. And that is just common sense. You know, after somebody's driving up prices, making things worse, you know, giving you a higher paper wage but a lower ability to actually purchase anything, reducing your purchasing power, then, you know, at that point you want to stop dealing with that guy. That guy is no longer your friend. That guy is your enemy. You're running for office right now, State Assembly 27th District. Let's say you get elected. What are some of the things then that you're going to do? What are you going to fight for?
Well, first is as I said, education is a big issue. We have good school districts and we have awful school districts. We need to be the best. We are a great state. We have good universities. We have highly qualified young people entering the job market. And if we have that, and if we can have good infrastructures, we should be the pride of America. There's no reason why we shouldn't be the best. So we need to fix our education system. We need to fix our pension issues. We need to sit at the table. We need to fight unions hard because they are just going to bankrupt the state. And it's easier for them to send Democrats to the state assembly and the Senate. Because, well, they buy their votes. My job is to go to see teachers, to see public employees, and to see police officers and firemen and say, look, what these people are promising you, it sounds really great. What if in 20 years there's not money to pay you? How would that work for you? So the idea is to try to just keep common sense, not be the bad guy, and say we need to fix this. Because we're all in this together and this is not working. So we have a big fight to have. New Jersey, for that, at the legislative level, is very Democrat. I have to side on the other side on that one. We need to fix this. And then at the social level, there's some things that need to be done too. Our governor is trying to make a run for the presidential election. She wants to prove that he's a conservative. Well, social conservative doesn't sit well with me. So it's about time that we stop sending people to jail for smoking your joints. And take the issues one by one. But we just need to work on that. We need to work harder. And we should be on social issues. We should be an example for the rest of the country and not train. We should have been the first state where gay marriage is legal. Not that I think that the state has any word to say as to who can get married or not. But if something should be legal or illegal, I don't see how gay marriage could possibly ever be illegal. We should have been the first one to do that.
Absolutely.
And we ended up being number 14. That's just not right.
Absolutely. Damien, first of all, let me thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Guys, if you want to learn more about Damien's campaign, go to DamienForLiberty.com and you can see what he's up to. If you want to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state, go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. My next guest is Beth Vest. She is the president of the National Organization of Libertarian Women. She is a representative to the Louisiana State Central Committee of the Libertarian Party, and she is the vice chair of the Libertarian State Leadership Alliance. Beth, welcome to the show.
Hi, Arvin.
Now, you know, one of the biggest parts of the Greece debacle that, you know, a lot of politicians are wary of is the pensions. You know, what when we look at our equivalent of pensions, we're talking about Social Security. And Social Security is, you know, it's called the third rail of American politics for a reason. It's a tough subject. You know, no one wants to see, you know, the elderly people totally without any means of supporting themselves. But at the same time, we don't want to see our country just become entirely so bankrupt and so unable to produce material goods that everybody's struggling. So what should America be doing? When, you know, what should we be doing as libertarians, as American citizens? What should we be doing right now about Social Security?
Well, Social Security is a complex issue. There are actually two trust funds that fund Social Security, and most people don't realize that neither of those trust funds have legal protection from being raided by the federal government. In mm-hmm. fact, neither one of those funds actually ever have very much money. I think in 2012, the debt for those funds exceeded $3 trillion. Mm-hmm. And eventually, this is going to be a situation that's going to be untenable. We're not going to be able to fund anything that way. They're projecting that by about 2030, only about 50% of the cost of those programs will be able to be covered by the payout that they get from payroll. Mm-hmm. Payroll is what funds those programs. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with Social Security is that we've allowed a lot of creeping entitlement into it. SSI is a good program for people that deserve it, but in 1984, Ronald Reagan signed the biggest bill allowing even children to get SSI. Like if they would be disabled as adults, they were eligible for disability. And these are children that had no job, and you know they were minor children. Mm-hmm. So we're paying out billions and billions of dollars to these programs, and I just don't see how we can sustain that. Greece probably doesn't have that direct same exact problem, but they probably have a similar problem. And you just can't maintain any kind of government program with a situation like that, not with the kind of debt and deficit. And like I said, nobody protects these funds. The government uses them like a bank. And so at any given time, there's really no money in those funds. So I'm not sure how we're...
Let's talk about that aspect, because that's not a thing that I think everyone really understands. People assume that money is paid into Social Security, and then it's kind of kept in a protected fund that no one else can touch. But that's not the reality of the situation. The reality is money goes into the Social Security fund, and it's supposed to be used only for Social Security. But in reality, Democrats and Republicans use it for their crazy projects, whether it's just nonsense job, whether it's finding ways to invade our homes or tread on our social freedoms, to tread on our personal rights. I mean, that's what's happening right now. That money should be set aside, but it isn't being set aside. We're basically allowing criminals and thieves to manage our retirement fund, and there's no one that could do it worse.
Absolutely. As I said, the funds don't even enjoy the protection of the law. The obligations that the government pays out of those funds are legally protected obligations that must be paid. But the funds themselves, they're not protected. And the Treasury, they issue Treasury bonds. They do all kinds of trickery to raid those funds and use them as a bank. And I'm not sure we're going to be able to sustain that. And plus, there's like 56 million Americans, I think, now tapping into those funds. A lot of those are SSI. And I really, you know, I don't have anything against some sort of safety net for people, but I used to work for a law practice that did a lot of SSI and Social Security claims. And they relaxed the laws to the point where you can get disability if you have a speech impediment. And it's just, these things are just getting worse and worse, and we're just not going to be able to continue to pay these claims. We're going to end up where Greece is eventually.
Now, let's look at some of the other aspects of this. I mean, we have one side, we have, you know, Social Security and pensions, and then there's two other areas that are really cropping up. And one is, you know, fiscal side, the overspending on things that either are not necessary or things that are actively destructive. I mean, the things like the war on drugs, they're expensive, they're damaging, they're devastating, but they do cost a lot of money. And on the other side, we have monetary policy. We have, you know, the federal government trying to find ways to shut out its competitors. Where do you think that libertarians should be fighting right now? Should we be fighting the fiscal side, the monetary side, both sides?
Well, libertarians tend to come down on the side of good fiscal judgment as far as programs that don't work. Mm-hmm. Not only are programs like, well, the war on drugs is not just a monetary problem, it's a social problem. There's 100 problems rolled up into that. One of the things is it creates jobs. It's like anytime you institutionalize any kind of program, charities, handouts, war on drugs, anything like that, the people within those programs have an interest in keeping those programs going because they get, that's where they make their living. So it's really hard to disband those sorts of programs. And of course, the federal government's not going to help us with that at all. They're going to continue that. And I'm not sure what the answer is. We need more libertarians in government, that's for sure. But I think we've got a long way to go, but hopefully we can get there.
One of the things that we saw as some of these problems in Greece started to explode was a sudden and dramatic increase in interest in things like Bitcoin. Do you think that there's hope that in the future years, future decades, that we will be able to separate ourselves from unreliable government-run currencies?
I certainly hope so. Government-run currencies are a real shell game, and mm-hmm. I'm sure many people are aware of that. You can actually make money buying and selling currencies and trading in currencies, and mm-hmm. there's something wrong with that. Not that I have anything wrong, you know, not that I have anything against people having a free exchange in the market, but when you're able to affect the value of currency by trading the currency itself, there's a problem. So if things begin to fail and people want to start using Bitcoin, you know, that might be the answer. So some systems might just develop over time because of the failure of the systems that are in place. That's sort of how things go, I think.
Now, when we look at the big side, that big, crazy spending side, and people say, well, where can we, either at the state level or the federal level, where can we cut spending right now? What can we just get rid of entirely so we can cut spending so that we don't end up going the way of Greece? What do you say? Where do you think are some of those first cuts?
Wow. None of those cuts would be well received. Somebody is going to be mad. But speaking back to the topic I know about, which is SSI, I would say that we need to really scale back on what we allow to be paid through SSI. Mm-hmm. A speech impediment, you know, that's not something a grade schooler should be getting an SSI check for. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of those kinds of things. That's where I would start.
Mm-hmm. And I think that makes a huge amount of sense. I mean, there's so many different areas, but we can start with the really simple ones right away. That says, listen, Social Security was designed for one purpose. It is failing to do that. But just because it can't do one thing doesn't mean we should now try to use this failed product to do 20 other things as well. That doesn't make any sense. If a thing is broken, don't expand it. If anything, contract it. What about, you know, when it comes to, I mean, unlike Greece, which has a relatively modest defense budget, I mean, ours is enormous. Do you think that there's areas in there where we can consider scaling back?
Yeah, we could probably scale back our military budget a great deal. I think we waste a lot of money on unnecessary research and development. Not all mm-hmm. of it is unnecessary, but I think everybody's aware that the military spending and what goes on there is just an enormous part of our budget that's unnecessary. Nobody knows what it really is. It's really hard to pin down mm-hmm. that budget. And I think the first thing that would help would be able to quantify what we're spending there. And it's very difficult to do. It's very difficult. If we were aware of it, we'd do better.
I mean, and one of the nice things is that we, because of things like, you know, WikiLeaks, because of things like Snowden, or, you know, because of people like Snowden, we now actually know a few of those, not all of them by any means, not even most of them, we know a few of them, and maybe that will give us some ideas of areas in which we can both cut spending and protect civil liberties at the same time. Beth, if somebody wants to find out more about what's going on in Louisiana, where should they go to get involved with the Libertarian Party?
Oh, they can visit our LPLLouisiana.org website. I think that's the web address. And okay. Or just Google Louisiana LP. We have a lot going on. We work in the legislature a lot, so we're pretty active here. So, yeah,
and
anybody
guys,
out there wants to give us a ring, do.
And you guys haven't been and absolutely and Beth, you know, having been myself to Louisiana to see what's been going on with the Libertarian Party there, it is impressive. There is so much energy there. There's so much work happening, lobbying, you know, candidates, etc. I mean, there's so much going on. It's a really incredible time. Beth, thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Thank you, Arvin. Anytime.
And guys, if you want to get involved in the Libertarian Party in your state, if you don't live in Louisiana, you will live somewhere else, go to lp.org/states and you can see how to get involved in a Libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. You know, one of the great things about my role on the Libertarian National Committee is I get to meet people from all over the country who are realizing the importance of liberty and how it makes everyone's lives better. I'm meeting people who are running for office, who have run for office multiple times, and people who are running for office the first time. Right now with me is Boyd Kendall. He's running for the Senate District 51 in Mississippi. Boyd, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
Now, Boyd, is this your first time running, or have you run many times before?
I ran in 2011 for House District 109 as a Republican.
Okay.
That was the first time I ever ran for office.
And it's exciting for me to see. You know, I've talked to so many people who, you know, probably most famously was Rob Sarvis, who ran as a Republican and then realized that he wanted to run as a Libertarian. He wanted to be part of the organization that was really trying to downsize government, cut spending, protect civil liberties. You know, we're seeing the results of big government in Greece. We're seeing what big government leads to when it's left unchecked. We're seeing a country that has gone from just like the might of ancient Athens, the sort of pinnacle of human civilization, to a total disaster right now. What are some lessons that we can learn at the state level? What should states be thinking about when they look at this? What lessons should they be taking away?
That we need to be prepared for the federal government actually going bankrupt, just like Greece is doing right now.
And
some of the things that we could do is learn how to actually control and cut our own spending here on the state level.
Mm-hmm.
Using
Mississippi as an example, what are some areas where you would say that Mississippi should be cutting its spending?
One of the big areas would be the Department of Corrections with the incarceration rate, because they have, in the state of Mississippi, has one of the highest incarceration rates across the nation, and the vast majority of it is drug crime related. I believe that there's nonviolent offenders who are sitting there in prison for 20, 30 years because they had a small amount of drugs on them, and we're spending something like $63-$64 a day just to keep them incarcerated. That's one spot that we could actually sit there and cut spending on a daily basis, on a yearly basis, actually.
And there's that. The nice thing about that is, one, we're cutting spending, so we're making total financial collapses less likely. But on the other side, we're also cutting crime. We're improving people's lives. I mean, if you were going to describe, when you describe something, what are some of the benefits besides the obvious one of just not spending so much money? What are some of the benefits of reducing that incarceration?
It frees up space inside the prisons for the people who actually need to be there, the violent offenders. And then also it puts more people back outside, be able to work on a daily basis, be able to take care of their families, have complete family units, and to be able to work and make money and spend money in the economy to help boost the economy.
That I think is just such a critical point that people forget, that just because somebody at one point in his or her life, just because somebody's used drugs once, doesn't mean that they're never going to be able to do anything productive ever again. I mean, our current president used drugs once, and while I certainly disagree with his policies, I don't think he is just unfit for all work ever. I mean, I think that there's things that he could do, not what he's doing right now, but I think there are things he could do that would be actually advantageous to the economy.
Right. And to give you a little bit of background, I worked in a prison for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I sit there and met with these people who every day as a correctional officer talk to them and know that a lot of them would like to be able to be out just to be able to work and support their family and see their family.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you also have the ones who sit there and like being in prison because they have the 3 meals a day, and a bed, and they don't have to worry about anything. So it's a 50-50 situation whenever it comes to who would actually come out and work and who wouldn't. But I believe the vast majority would come out and actually do some work and help support the economy.
Absolutely. What are some of the other areas? If Mississippi has had its share of financial difficulties. What are some of the other areas in which Mississippi should be reducing its spending right now?
And it's not always necessarily the reducing of spending, but if you look at the education system here in Mississippi. We have charter schools, we have private schools, we have public schools. Mm-hmm. And right now, this year, they have a Initiative 42, which is trying to mandate a certain spending level in order to fully fund the schools, which I'm all for public education if it's done right. And one of the ways that we could actually cut spending so that more money actually goes towards the students is by reduction of administrative staff within the entire school system. Like if you took the county, at the county level of every county and reduced the administrative staff down to the county level instead of each school district having every single position duplicated, you'd mm-hmm. actually save a lot of money and spend more money per student instead of on staff. That's one way that we could help the education system.
And that makes perfect sense. I mean, there's no reason to take an ineffective model and make it more ineffective by having twice as many people doing the same nothing that the other half are also doing. And I think that, you know, like you and Damien, so many other people are saying the same thing. They're saying, listen, we need to cut spending in education. We might not need to reduce the quality of education. In fact, long term, probably what we want to do is increase the quality by making it easier for people to leave public school and find other types of education. But at least let's start off by finding ways where we can cut the spending right now. What are some of these other areas when we look around the state or even around the country? What are some other areas where we can be cutting that spending so that we have, instead of what Greece is having, have the exact opposite result?
Right. Be servicing the state's debt itself. Because currently the Mississippi budget is between $2 and $3 billion this year. But mm-hmm. You also have like $22 to $23 billion just in debt and bond debt, and that we're paying an interest rate on every year just to continue to have that debt. And then the state also has $53 to $54 billion worth of unpaid or underfunded unfunded pensions and plans and debts that they have to actually service every year. And that's one way, if we started cutting down on the debt and actually taking care of this unfunded and underfunded plans that they have to pay for, mm-hmm. we can start saving the money from the interest rate alone in order to either help for the schools or go back to the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. And that's really powerful. I mean, people, you know, like we all know what interest is like. I mean, you know, whether you've had a mortgage in your life or, you know, you ever had credit card debt or you've ever bought anything on credit, you know what interest is like. And, you know, sometimes you end up paying quite a bit on interest. Now, if we take the – we're talking about, you know, $50 billion of debt and a budget that's, you know, less than that. And we're saying that, listen – it just the interest, if we just pay down this debt, if we just get rid of this debt, if we stop spending money on crazy things until we've actually paid for this debt, that means we would permanently save that money. That's money back in the pocket of each and every citizen. If you pay taxes, sales taxes, property tax, if you pay anything at all to the government, you can pay less of it just with less debt.
Right. And whenever I win the Senate seat, one of the things that I actually want to work on is getting rid of the yearly property tax here in the state of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, having to pay every year just to be able to stay on your own land is ridiculous. And that's more money that they could be spending on improving their property or just living every year without having to work as much in order to stay on the property that they already own.
And I think that, you know, property taxes always struck me as just one of the government's biggest ridiculous insults. To say you work so hard, you save up, you buy a property, and you have to keep on buying the property that you already bought. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And I so strongly support what you're doing in Mississippi. Boyd, let me ask you this. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, is there somewhere they can go?
I have a Facebook page. It's www.facebook.com/VoteBoydKindle.
Okay, so that's facebook.com/VoteBoydKendall. Boyd, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on the show today.
Thank you for having me today.
Guys, you can see how much work Boyd has been putting into this. I mean, you've seen that he's gone from the Republican Party to the Libertarian Party. That's how serious he is about cutting spending. He's talking right now about cutting property taxes and making everybody's taxes lower by getting rid of all this debt. But here's the thing, Boyd's not going to do this all by himself. If Boyd was 10 superhumans, he couldn't do this all by himself. He's going to need your help. And if you want to help make people like Boyd your representative, if you want to help make sure that you have a representative that's there cutting taxes, cutting spending, you know, not locking up and destroying families through the silly war on drugs, but instead uniting families, allowing people to work and be productive members of society, if that's what you want to see, you need to get involved yourself. And the first step of that is going to lp.org/states. You can meet other great libertarians in your state. You can work on things like social media or fairs or booths. In fact, you might even decide to do exactly what Boyd is doing and run for office. But that first step is up to you, lp.org/states. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.